Hey guys, and welcome to Parent Q Live, where it's our goal to help parents do family better. My name is Carlos Whitaker, or Carlos Enrique with Kid Guzman Chabocabeo. If you want to kind of get to know me a little bit better, you can call me that. I'm going to be your host on this episode of Parent Q Live, but this episode isn't like a normal episode. Let me tell you why. Because we walked in to record our next few episodes, honestly, of Parent Q Live, and we are going to a weekly format in 2017. So you guys are going to be getting these every single week. I'm super excited about, you know, finding more resources to equip parents to do family better. So we walk in this morning as a team, Reggie, Kristen, and myself, to record a few episodes of this. But when we scheduled this, I guess hindsight being 2020, we didn't realize that today was going to be the day that America got themselves a new president-elect. So we walked in this morning with what I'll call election hangover. And we were all, you could just see in our eyes, we'd been up, everyone had been up until all hours of the night waiting for the results. I drove in from Nashville, Tennessee to Atlanta, Georgia. So I had a 4-hour drive this morning, okay, in order to get here to record these. But we're all just thinking about one thing. Oh my gosh, can you believe what just happened? Now, here's the beautiful thing. All three of us come from different areas of life, different seasons of life, different political views. We're not of the same thing, right? The one same thing we do have in common is Jesus. So that is the unifying thing. So because of that, we were like, huh, you know, we're feeling this. We're feeling this with our kids. Our kids are, my kids they're a little bit stressed out about this election. Kristen told me that her son's a little bit stressed out of the conversation. So we said, why don't we have a conversation about what just happened? So here's the thing. This is a no show note podcast. There was no research done. There were no interviews done in order to adequately prepare for what the conversation we're going to have today. But what we did do was we pulled up three chairs and we hit record. And that is what you guys are going to get. Reggie, Kristen, and myself basically having a conversation on how we can help our kids navigate what they just experienced in this election. And not only that, but what they will experience when a big shift and change happens in their life. So, coming from three different perspectives, we really hope you guys enjoy this. It was just an off-the-cuff conversation. So we invite you guys to just pull up a chair, pull up a seat, pull up, I don't know what you're going to pull up, but just sit down with us and enjoy our conversation, just a candid conversation on how to help our kids feel better during this election.
Whatever this situation is, it's hard to talk about a complex issue.
Yep.
I mean, what do you feel like are the real issues, though, related to kids and how you explain just the campaign up until the election and the way leaders talk to each other?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, my son, I know, was listening to everything.
Yeah.
In fact, the other day, my husband and I were both looking at each other in shock because he knew all of the names of all of the candidates who ran in the primaries.
Yep.
And I'm looking at my husband going, did you talk about this? And he's looking at me like, I didn't talk about this. So he was just listening and listening in much deeper than we had ever anticipated.
Absolutely. Way deeper.
Yeah.
And he's 7.
Right.
Right.
I mean, you fast forward that to a kid who's 10 or 11, and they're not only listening, and not that he's not understanding a lot, but they're even understanding more.
Mm-hmm.
They're understanding the innuendos and the statements that are made. Right. From both sides. And
it'll say even young children can interpret our tone and understand emotion and gravitate toward, you know, hey, if adults are feeling scared, they pick up on that kind of fear. And so there's a tendency in elections to feel fearful because of the unknown. And I think kids can pick up on that.
Yeah.
Now, Carlos, your kids are, you've got one adopted?
One adopted, Korean. One brown, created. One white, created. 14, 13, and 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and how did they respond to all this? They were...
They haven't really talked about it until yesterday. I mean, maybe the last 2 days when they were like, oh, this is about to happen. Lasai, he's 10. He was still, even last night, oh, Trump's going to win. You know, like it was... It wasn't Sayana. I could see here's the other thing. She's also the anxious child. So she's already, that's kind of in her. And so,
she's the one who came to me in tears last night, like scared, like where I that's when I replied to her, he's scared too, baby. Like it's, you know,
right.
So yeah, she's scared. And,
hopefully, yeah, hopefully the speech that he made last night indicated a little bit more of, I'm feeling the weight
yes.
of something instead of I can do anything.
Yes.
And I'm going to need people to play together and I'm going to need to learn. And that was the thing that, that honestly, as I look at it, the whole campaign with everybody, that there wasn't humility or.
Well, I told the only thing that I told her last night that was not like fluffy was, I mean, it was just more concrete for her is, you know, I said, now listen, you know, your Tia Nancy, she's my aunt, 100% Mexican, lives in East LA, mm-hmm. owns an ice business.
Mm-hmm.
I said, she voted for Trump. So you need to know, baby, that like people you love and that love you.
That's
that
good.
You don't need to be scared of him because you're not scared of her.
Right.
And so, and she's like, she voted for Trump. I was like, yeah. Like, you know, a lot of people that voted for Trump. So, you know, I think that made her feel better, you know.
I think that's huge because it tears down kind of an us and them.
Yes.
This is good or this is bad. And now the dark side has won and yeah. it's going to take over and that kind of fear. Because I'm trying to take it through that filter of how do you look at your child's fear?
Mm-hmm.
And when you genuinely as an adult feel the same kind of fears,
yeah.
how do you not, you know, put that over on your kid or yeah. increase what they're feeling already.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember having a sense in the last several elections when leaders would get elected, the demonization that happened with all of them.
Yeah.
And you just want to go, why are you doing that with a leader, period, in front of your family or kids? And I do think there's something that can be said for the fact that you're introducing him to another friend or leader who is voting in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They're good people who voted for Hillary, good people yeah. who voted for Trump. I mean, are there really Christians who voted for Hillary? Are there really Christians right. who voted for Trump? Really?
Right.
Are you kidding me?
Right, right.
And when people act like that
right.
on, you know, social yes. media, I just sure. want to go, where is the empathy and where is the understanding and yeah. where is the hearing each other and where is the bridge that needs to be built?
Yeah.
And it does open up a platform, though, to have conversations with your kids about some issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know that we would have talked about some of the same stuff with Sawyer if he hadn't been hearing things, but you just kind of feel as a parent you're going to weigh in on some commentary with things and go, you know, even if you're going to vote a certain way, sometimes, you know, gosh, how do you even say that? But we disagree about yeah. this issue, you know, or whatever it is to say, hey, we're going to look out for and respect all women.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to look out for and respect people no matter of their nationality mm-hmm. or their color or their appearance. And I feel sad yeah. or hurt when somebody doesn't do that.
I mean, I think that that could be a massive, if you think about it, today and in the next week, if parents showed their kids relationships they have with people that voted differently than they do
wow.
and showed them and said, look, they're safe. This mm-hmm. is a safe friend. Like
mm-hmm.
we love them and they love us.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I think that safety is so important.
Yeah, but that's true. I mean, I think there's an essence of safety that's huge because kids look to adults to protect their world, to protect
yeah.
their life and keep them safe in a whole different way. So especially for younger kids, for elementary age kids to go, it's still okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a weird mixture of emotions right now. I remember when Obama was elected, I did not vote for Obama,
uh-huh.
but I was proud.
Mm-hmm.
I was proud for a lot of friends of mine who did vote for him.
Yeah,
because I felt like it was a marker that meant something
mm-hmm.
to a lot of people.
Yeah.
That there isn't a lid that, you know, our country can celebrate differences, and there was so much in that that even though I didn't vote for him, I was proud.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, I hoped, which I still hope, that some of those kinds of elections and things will move us toward unity, not toward
right.
disagreeing. And even with this election, as complicated as it's been and as horrible as it's been in some ways in the way the campaign was run and the competition heated up, I just think there's an opportunity here for parents, for leaders in Democrat and Republican that are Christians
mm-hmm.
to go, you know what? We have an opportunity to build a bridge. There's not a divide here the way that people claim that there is, because so many of us that went to the polls went back and forth in our mind, if we're honest. And so many of us could have gone either way in who we voted for, because, you know, one day you ask me, I'm voting for this person. The next day you ask me, I'm voting for this person, because it was such a roller coaster ride. And I think the majority of Americans are for a lot of things related to how we treat each other, how we're going to fight for injustices, how we want racial reconciliation. I mean, there's all these lists of things that come to my mind, and I don't think that is a political party issue. I think that's a Christian issue, if that makes sense.
But I think with our children, too, from like 10 and younger, they're going to be quick to jump in and try to make it a right versus wrong kind of issue. And the way that they talk to their friends at the lunch table, the way that they talk to their friends on the playground, it's hard for them to get into those nuances that we may be feeling as adults as we approach the election, where, you know, there was a low percentage of people who really had faith in either candidate. So let's be honest, we had a lot of questions, a lot of anxiety, maybe debate in our own mind. And yet for our kids, if they know who you voted for, sometimes they go, that was the right person. And either the right person won or the right person lost. And they may feel defensive or vindicated today either way. But to go, how do you help them, guide them through a conversation that they might have at the lunch table or on the school bus?
How do you do that, Reggie?
Well, since, you know, I'm definitely the expert on almost 60 years of watching political drama. You know, I
take us back to 1972.
Well, go back to 1960 something. And, you know, you go back and you look at presidents who've come and gone. And I've always said this, our nation isn't more Christian because it was a Democrat or Republican president. Our nation isn't better racially in reconciliation because it was a Democrat or Republican president. And we could argue about economy, but that depends on economy for who. And so, I mean, at the end of the day, I think when issues are issues, I think John Acuff talked about this one time. When issues are issues, we fight about them and we demonize them. But when you know somebody who is different than you, when you have a friendship with somebody who's different with you, when you love somebody who's different than you, it gives you a different kind of understanding of what really is at stake. And it's not simply, I'm right and you're wrong, which is my honest fear is whether Hillary had won or because Trump won, that either party, because they win, decide they are right because they won. Because winning doesn't make you right. And there's still half the country who is hurting or who's not understanding. And so I feel like for us, it really does have to be that we take the initiative and we're intentional about raising children and families who cross over the lines with each other and get to know each other and our differences and care about each other. That it really has to happen on the front lines. No political system is ever going to fix this. As a Christian, I have to go back to the New Testament. The disciples kept saying to Jesus, so when are you going to overthrow Rome and take over the government? When are you going to become president? And Jesus said, no, you're missing it. This isn't a political fix. We're not going to fix this politically. I didn't come to set up my kingdom on earth. I came to set up my kingdom in the hearts of men. This is a heart issue. It's not a political issue. And that's why I think as families and as leaders and as parents, we have a different kind of responsibility to fight for the heart of a kid and let that reflect what happens in our country. And that was kind of my little speech. But
that's good.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, keeping the priority on teaching your kids character, keeping, I think, I'm interpreting what you're saying, but saying, hey, we're still going to talk about kindness. We're still going to talk about gratitude. We're still going to talk about generosity. We're going to embody and live out those things for our kids. In the hopes that that's really what matters.
As a middle-aged white man, it does bother me, though, that I, if I'm honest, that there are children of different races or people who really are genuinely worried or scared or afraid. And I want to go, so what can I do on my side, practically speaking, to make sure we shoot at that and take that away?
I think your, what's your son's name again?
Sawyer.
I think Sawyer has a chance to go to school and just, and literally just be like, hey, I just want to let you know that I love you. You know, and That's it. He doesn't have to say. He's seven. He doesn't have to like turn it. But hey, he has an opportunity to go and just be there. You know. And then from seven to Reggie. Yep. Right, Reggie is middle aged.
Yeah,
you know, you have an opportunity to just be there.
I'm a little above middle age, but that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, our conversation today, I shared with you guys earlier, and I don't know. I feel like I failed as a parent, but I'm still trying to wrestle with this. But I woke up to my news feed going through, and there was a lot of hostility.
Yeah.
That I was reading, and also just like I mentioned before, a lot of fear. And our son goes to an international school where he's around kids not only of different color, but literally different nationalities.
Yeah.
And there was just something in me this morning that felt like, hey, I need to get down with him and have a conversation and say, there may be some kids who feel afraid today. Because I don't want him to be shocked by that if it comes up. And saying, you know, they feel afraid because they aren't sure at this point whether or not Trump is going to have respect for women and for girls, you know, like your sister. They're not sure whether he'll have respect for people with dark skin, with brown skin. And so just understand that maybe how they're feeling.
Right.
But we hope that that's not true. Yeah. We hope that we're going to see a president who respects all people of all kinds. And we're all still thinking that that is possible, that that's
And let me make a distinction with that, too, because there are some who are going to listen to that and go, whoa, wait a second. He's not a racist, and he doesn't think that way really, and that may be true,
right?
Absolutely.
But the perceived reality for the people who are hurting is they think that,
And it's still true to them.
Absolutely, right. That's their perceived reality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think somewhere along the way, I think we're responsible to lean in and to comfort and to care and to give confidence and security. Yeah. To a generation who needs to understand, gosh, wouldn't it be a great world if they would understand we can all disagree and still get along. And we can all disagree and still love each other. And we can all disagree and still care about each other in very important ways.
Mm-hmm. I love your idea of pointing out the ant. That to me speaks huge volumes because I'm thinking the best thing he told me today on our drive this morning is that he got really, really quiet and I asked him what he was thinking.
Yeah.
And he said nothing. And then got quiet again, and then he said, okay, actually, Mama, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Sawyer's always thinking.
Always.
He's just always. He's analytical.
And he said, I'm thinking about my black and my brown friends.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't really go elaborate on that, you know, but my heart as a mom went, I'm glad that you're thinking that way. And I hope as parents that we can say, think about your aunt, think about your uncle, think about our friends, think about our neighbors.
Yep.
Because having those relationships with people who are different, voted different, look different, think differently than we do, I think can help.
I think there's another thing, and I've been thinking about this a lot the last 2 years, and I don't even know what it means exactly. It's just kind of a new thought for me, and I was born in the 60s, so I've watched civil rights for decades, and I've had black friends in ministry. I've had black friends who do life with me in a lot of ways, And one of the thoughts I've had recently is we'll work together with people that are different than we are. We will have conversations and dialogues with people who are different than we are. But very seldom do we do life with people who are different than we are. And somewhere in the context of the next chapter, the next story, if our country is going to move toward true reconciliation in a racial way, we have got to figure out how to do life with people who don't think like we are, who don't believe exactly what we believe, who come from a different background than we do. Because I think it's in doing life together that we get to the empathy, that we get to the genuine, to the genuine experience of you're important to me as a person.
Yeah.
And so I wish there was a way to lean into parents and say, in all of the discussions you have with your kids, as a white mom or as a brown dad, you know, you can't talk them into something that they don't believe or don't feel. The only way they can really change is to be in a relationship with someone where they genuinely see them as a friend.
Absolutely.
And when that happens and we're really loving our neighbor, because this is a core command in the New Testament, when we're really not trying to change our neighbor but loving our neighbor as ourselves, then I think that begins to fundamentally resolve a lot of the issues.
It does. And I think loving them doesn't make their difference in the skin color disappear.
No, not at all.
Because I think that we can look at an 8-year-old on a playground, and honestly, I look at my 10-year-old, and he doesn't know that he's playing with a black friend and a German friend. They're just his friends, right? And right. So when you're 10, that's the ultimate basis of your existence. Is you're just kind of like having a good time. But then when they're 20, suddenly there's real issues that come up because of these things. And so it's like transitioning them from understanding that, you know, it doesn't matter the color of our skin, all these things, but to really be in community, like Reggie's saying, when you do get older, you acknowledge those things inside of, because I had a friend a couple weeks ago that told me, you know, Carlos, I don't even see you as not white. Like, I don't even, and
well,
I know what
I see you as young and brown. Yeah. I'm just going
to
say that. Right
well,
now,
and I know what he was trying to say to me.
Right. I get it.
But
it kind of feels weird.
But I'm like, but I am.
Right.
And my existence,
right.
things
that's
I
who
have
you
to
are.
Deal
right.
with right. are, you know, right. and so like, I get it. But at the same time, I think as we're parenting, you know, there's a beauty of looking at our kids and seeing, oh, they don't see color. They just see, and that
but
may
it's
be
important
true.
To see some yes, things. I mean, I would is. Say, I would hope that you would not see me as a man.
Right.
I want
right.
you to see me as I
right.
am,
yep. yes.
and also still respect
I do,
me as I,
do
I am.
Those sometimes
so.
Yeah, as well. I see you kind of very. Anyway, I don't want to
more text messages.
Right.
From
so right.
Kristen or
Kristen, yeah.
Really.
They kind of. Anyway, a lot of testosterone. Anyway, there's this thing also that I just, and I know I keep coming back to the Christian side of this, but you know, when Jesus said love your neighbor, it was such a fundamental shift because he was talking to the Pharisees who up until that time defined their neighbor as someone who believed what they believed, someone who lived in close proximity to themselves.
Yes.
And it was such a jarring thing that he connected that idea to loving God that one of the Pharisees said, okay, within who is my neighbor? Mm. And what Jesus did then was such an interesting thing. He took a Samaritan and made mm-hmm. a Samaritan the hero of the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was like, even a Samaritan mm-hmm. gets this.
Absolutely.
Even a Samaritan, the most unlikely person who doesn't think like you think, who doesn't believe what you believe, understands the power of reaching into somebody else's life, getting messy in their situation, and caring about them.
Yeah.
And I want to go sometimes, you know what, even a Democrat, even a Republican, even people who you think don't believe what you believe, get this if we give them a chance to get this in the right way.
Yeah.
And there's something about humanizing another person
yes.
Versus demonizing them. And again, in your story, Carlos, you were talking about your daughter feeling afraid and saying, I'm yeah. scared. And your response to her was to give an emotion to Trump, the very person, the very thing she's afraid of, and say, he feels fear too, which is so unifying to me to yeah. go, that other person, the one that you know, mm-hmm. think is a liar or you think is a cheat or you think whatever attachments and labels you've put on them, that they're human, that they have these emotions and these feelings.
Well, you know, and the other thing you did was you connected them back to an aunt, which
yeah.
again,
yeah.
there's a human piece to this.
Absolutely.
That is huge. Boy, that's just a great principle. What if we just decided every time there was something negative said about somebody else,
yep.
either in leadership or authority or that's different, the first thing we do is we look for an opportunity to connect them to something human.
Yes.
That's great. That's a
yeah.
great idea.
I think you add
we should
that
do
to
a podcast
orange,
on
you know?
That, actually.
You know, it's the one last thing I'll say on this is, I can't remember if it was in my church or another church I was at recently, but something human that happened is the pastor put up, he was speaking about the election, and he put up a picture of 6-year-old Hillary and a picture of 6-year-old Trump.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
he didn't have to say one more thing. The mm-hmm. point was taken. We all swallowed it.
Yeah.
And we looked at those pictures and suddenly we were human. Mm-hmm. And everybody in the room is human, and the dreams and everything that child had, to me, that moment was like, okay, you've got to connect it back. You know, all of our frustrations, all those things go away when we see kind of the purity of that. It was a powerful moment.
You know, there's some amazing stories that I've heard through the years, actually in Congress and Senate, where there are people who are at each other on the floor, but then they go out and and do, you know, all kinds of recreation together and golf together and hang out together and become best friends. That there are people actually across party lines that become best friends and care about each other's families and each other's worlds and stories. And sometimes we don't see that part.
Right.
Absolutely.
So maybe it's our job and responsibility to highlight that part.
Yes.
And when a president is inaugurated, you know, and another president is exiting and another president is coming in. I remember when Obama became president, one of the most powerful things that I thought happened was a letter that the Bush daughters wrote to the Obama girls. Mm. And it was this powerful, powerful letter written from one set of girls from a president to the daughters of the next president who were vehemently opposed to each other in policies.
Absolutely.
But when you listen and you read the letter, it was such a powerful demonstration of what's really at stake here and what really matters here.
Yeah.
And it boiled it down to relationships. It boiled it down to valuing your dad and your relationship with your dad. It boiled it down to family. And it was so powerful.
I had the opportunity to have breakfast at the White House with the president, 2014. I sang and spoke at the Easter prayer breakfast, and I was nervous.
You should have been.
Yeah, I was nervous. And this really, the parenting family thing comes right in. President Obama comes walking in to meet Heather and myself. My wife is Heather. And the first thing he says is, "Hey, Carlos. Hey, Heather. How are you guys? How are your daughters?" Mom. And obviously, he'd been prepped, you know. But we spent 15 minutes talking about our daughters.
That's great.
And and again, he didn't know whether or not I voted for him or not. But what he did was he pulled in the humanity. And he knew that, he loves his daughters, and I love my daughters, so we're going to go there. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful, beautiful breakfast that we were able to do that.
Well, it was that moment when the one guy in the debate asked the question, "What's something good you can say about each other?"
Bone. Yeah. Bone was his last name.
Yeah.
Bone. What a great question. What a great guy.
I know.
He kind of brought it all back around to, well, there is something human about each other, right, that you admire and respect.
Yeah.
And I give Hillary, you know, I mean, she basically stepped up and said, "Hey, I look at your kids and I'm thinking, hey, you got great kids." And I just think that there's some things we just can't forget. Maybe that's another thing that we do with our children, is we remind them that these are dads and moms and they love their kids. And it's kind of like the book we used to read about teachers. Mm-hmm. When you would see the teacher at the grocery store, there's a children's book. What is the name of that book?
It's such a great book. I'm already nervous because every time I'd see my teacher at the grocery store somewhere, it would stress me out.
Yeah, because
that teacher.
You think of her as a teacher, not as a person.
Yes.
And so this whole book is written to kids to understand that their teachers are people.
Yeah.
And it's just an interesting concept that, you know, they're
Let's write one that the president's a person.
Yeah.
That's what we should do.
Maybe we write every president has been a person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some struggle with different issues, and some have shown up at different points in our history for different purposes. And gosh, you think about Obama and the recession, you think about Bush and 9/11, you start thinking about these different parts of history that they've had to live through and be through with their families.
Yeah.
And again, given my age, I've watched every president gray.
Yes.
Because the pressure of the office mm-hmm. has grayed them tremendously. I watch them go in as young men, vibrant and excited, and by the time they're through, they're tired and gray. I mean, it's just, and they paid a price.
Even their eyes are gray.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, you're like, wow, they're tired.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's good.
It's true.
Well, and there's a principle there. Just, I'm thinking for myself as a mom and as a person to go, hey, anytime there's somebody out there that I don't understand, that I can't get on board with, that I'm really frustrated with, I love that idea of looking for what's good about them. You know, find like something that you like about them, that's good about them, that you can celebrate just practically as yourself personally so that your kids can pick up on that.
Absolutely. So there you guys have it. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation as much as I enjoyed being part of the conversation. What's great about Parent Q Live is this really is a conversation. We would love for it to be a conversation, not only with the three of us in here or whatever guests come into the podcast, but a conversation with you guys. And there's definitely some ways that you guys can contribute to the conversation. So if you guys wouldn't mind, you can look up Parent Q on Facebook and you'll find there different ways that you guys can be involved in the conversation. You can go to theparentq.org online. That is our blog and our website. And also, we would really love it if you guys subscribe. Again, this is going to turn into a weekly podcast. So if you can subscribe on iTunes or whatever podcast host you use, then you'll never miss an episode. And on a weekly basis in 2017, you guys will be getting brand new resources from us on how to do family better. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us, and we'll talk to you soon.